there were shake-ups among the non-coms. Sergeant Talbot replaced Lieutenant Lipton as first sergeant. A genial man, Talbot was appreciated by the enlisted men because he ignored red tape and did things by common sense rather than the book. Carson became company clerk, Lutz became a platoon runner, the platoon sergeants, all original Toccoa privates, all wounded at least once, were Charles Grant, second, Amos Taylor, third, and Earl Hale, first. Hale's promotion caused some mumble-mumble in first platoon. The men had nothing against him except that he was an outsider. He had been in company HQ section as a radio man. The men of the platoon circulated a rumor to the effect that Hale had complained to Winters that his wife was after him to get another stripe, and Winters had given him the platoon as a result. What made the men of the platoon unhappy was the way Johnny Martin got passed over. I guess the officers didn't like his flip attitude, Webster commented. Yet he was the quickest thinker, the best leader among us, and a natural for a platoon sergeant. Martin thought so too. Having survived three campaigns without a wound, he decided to let the medics know that he had a trick cartilage in his knee that incapacitated him for combat. He was soon on his way back to the States. The Toccoa men were thinning out like maple leaves in November, Webster wrote. A sense of hopelessness and exasperation filled the old men at Mourmelon. Here we were, still hiking over meadow and marsh, still trampling the rutabagas and breaking the fences, still in the field on training exercises. The veterans tried gold-bricking to get out of field exercises. They would report on sick call in the morning. Spears would ask the trouble, grunt, and send them to the aid station. There they could get admitted to the hospital for a day. A day of just lying around, reading magazines. It was easy to pull. They all did it, but never more than twice. Even Webster preferred pretend war to reading or doing nothing. The Ides of March brought a well-deserved reward to the men of the 101st Airborne. There was a division parade before the most brass the men had ever seen. General Eisenhower was there, along with General Taylor, Lieutenant General Sir Frederick Morgan, Lieutenant General Lewis Brereton, President Roosevelt's Secretary Stephen Early, Major General Matthew Ridgway, and others. In preparation, everybody scrubbed and washed, polished and shined, disassembled, cleaned, and reassembled all weapons, as Lieutenant Foley recalled. Ribbons were dug up and positioned precisely on the blouse. The men painted their helmets, stenciled the insignia of the 506th on the side, and when they were dry, oiled them until they glistened in the sun.